The Around the NFL Podcast is searching for Tom Brady's jersey.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Back in Culver City from Houston. All together as a group, our first show since the Super Bowl 51 Super Podcast, which, by the way, is the number one downloaded podcast in the history of NFL media. So thank you to everyone who said, hey, I want an informed hot take on one of the greatest games in Super Bowl history. Let me go to some Four Saucy Whites.
Wow. How many downloads?
I don't like to say the number. It's just a lot.
Is informed hot take an oxymoron?
No, actually, I think you can have a hot take.
Wow.
That's logical.
And this is
my opinion.
This is the most downloaded by far. This is like a 28-3 lead, except, you know, we're not blowing this.
Yeah,
like, no one's ever coming
like
back.
The MASH
callback. Super Bowl. Nailed it.
Yeah. This is like the MASH series finale.
Oh, well.
All right, MASH. Okay. Oh, long time
I mean, the
ago.
Numbers were so jarring that my first thought was technical glitch, that it's not accurate.
The number is 7 million downloads, which we are so, so proud. And, you know, I took a couple days off after the Super Bowl, and I spent half of one of my off days fielding media requests after I broke the story on Tom Brady's jersey.
That is how that is the tenor of the off season that you're beginning, which is essentially Dan promoting Dan wall to wall.
Yeah, cut to 10:30 this morning, guys. I gotta go upstairs and tape something.
Oh, is that how I talk?
Yeah. That's when you're a little sheepish.
I don't even know if I did ask for permission.
That was
not
Mark,
that I would have.
That
to.
Was Mark this morning.
Okay.
What happened this morning?
I don't have any idea what you're referring to.
Oh,
wow.
What are you referring to? That felt like a slight, but I.
This morning you said I have to go and do something for the podcast.
Oh, well, but mine was not just. It wasn't just a giant 1 minute long soundbite about Mark. It included another human being other than just myself, as Sydney would attest to.
See, Mark likes to shield his ego. But it's all there.
Well, you can frame it however you'd like.
Speaking of Mark and his ego, he wrote a banger that we're going to talk about today. And I like this idea, this conceit, Mark. And I, you know, every word I enjoyed.
I didn't
well.
Come up with it.
It is the storylines we'll be tracking, and we're excited to track this offseason, other than Tony Romo. Obviously, that will be the dominant storyline in a lot of ways, but that is something else.
Including a bonus section of 10 storylines I refuse to report on.
The obvious follow-up question here is, Mark, is there any off-season storyline that you could possibly be excited to monitor?
The word excited was a tad strong, but, you know, you've got to roll with the assignment as it's given.
I see it in your copy. I'm excited.
Well...
This is like when Wes told us that he's in character.
I guess it is this. It is relative to Tony Romo. Okay. Excited relative to having to do 4,000 Tony Romo.
That's not in the copy, though.
Yes, it is. Read it.
In a world – all right, here's the copy. In a world beyond Romo, here's what I'm excited to track this. So I think it just says you're excited.
That sounds like it's in the copy.
We like the topic so much. We did a segment about it on Friday. It's going to be on Fridays up to the minute. And I think that's going to be weekly that they give us a few minutes here. So people should watch Up to the Minute Live, 4 o'clock Eastern.
Nice plug.
Daily.
Excellent, Greg. NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal, in fact.
Look at
wall
you two.
Wall-to-wall
no,
coverage.
It can't be. That's NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal.
Look at you two.
Well, isn't Up to the Minute on NFL Network? This is where you get this whole bit from? Right.
Well, that's
and fair. Then you're you guys are we're all going to be on this
as a force.
So I'm just saying, does that you know?
Well, how about
you all need your own?
Well, hold on. Set. Let's turn it around. Do you feel a little annoyed that we're now joining you on NFL Network?
I think it's nice to class up the joint. You
I
know?
Think it's cool that there's room enough on your coattails for three of us.
Actually, I looked over. I peeked into Greg's cubicle when the news broke we'd be doing this, and he was just grinding his teeth. He was so angry. All right, so we'll be talking about those off-season storylines to track. We are going to settle up our sandwich props.
Sandwich proposition update.
I don't even remember that one.
Whose voice was that? That was professional.
Yeah, I went searching through the archives.
That was a good one. We're going to settle that up. I'm actually thrown off by that. All season we were tracking the best radio and television calls of the season. We've whittled that down. It was originally going to be a top 10. And some of them didn't pass the smell test when we revisited them, outside of the moment.
To say the least.
And we settled on a top 5 calls, but I'm feeling really good about the top 5 calls. They're good calls.
They were thoroughly vetted.
Most of the room is very excited about this segment.
I turned to Greg. He's just nodding his head. Very good for podcast.
Well, I thought you were going to go to the whole bit of, Wes. Yeah, it wasn't the most enthusiastic.
Well, we can get into that. Well,
it's not really a bit, Greg.
Especially number 5, but we'll get to that. And we'll touch on the sound effects and the Patriots win over the Falcons in Super Bowl 51. Chris Wessling wrote a banger there. But before we do any of that, let's start with the news. And to do that, we check behind the glass with new money. So good to see her again, the first lady of the Around the NFL podcast. How are you, Money?
I'm good. Hey, guys, I missed you.
Missed you, too.
Yeah.
Hi, Sid.
Missed my board. Had to do everything post last week.
Yeah, that was
terrible.
Annoying.
Wearing a cool Around the NFL shirt right
now. True story,
now.
Yeah. Got some swag.
Yeah.
Big
a lot of stuff
for,
happened while we were gone.
Big thanks for staying up till about 2 p.m., if not later, 3 p.m., 3 a.m.
A.m. In the a.m. Yep. That happened.
On the night of the Super Bowl show. I mean,
that's how you
a lot
get
of sacrifice.
That's how you get up on Mount Rushmore.
There you go.
That's all.
I mean, it wasn't. I'm sure.
Why are you about to marginalize what you're doing?
No, I'm not. All I'm going to say is I will never forget Mark Sessler showing up at the airport still in his suit from the night before at 7 in the morning or whatnot.
He had just left my hotel room after polishing off a 12-pack.
I wish I had 12.
You guys drink?
Ago. You were there.
Pepsi.
All right, let's do some news.
Francisco, that's fun to say.
Let's start in San Francisco, where a new brain trust is in place. Kyle Shanahan, who was most recently seen blowing the Super Bowl with the rest of the Atlanta Falcons.
Wow.
And let's keep it real around here. John Lynch, the new general manager, who was an analyst for Fox a couple month ago, or last week, actually. I saw him at media night doing some media stuff. Now he's a GM. That's interesting. So the two men were on a dais together discussing the new direction of the San Francisco 49ers. Jed York was also on hand, the team owner. He was quoted saying, "I believe in these guys. We aren't where we want to be. We're a two-win team right now, and we need to make sure these guys have everything they need to get up and running. And I believe in these guys, and I believe they're going to be here a lot longer than that." Well, you better be right, because 6-year contracts are not that common. And, gentlemen, one of the questions that came from the Bay Area press, which is not happy with the 49ers regime, was about Kyle Shanahan, who was the offensive coordinator of the Falcons, who, as I said, were not able to close out the Super Bowl. And there was a report out there after the game that Kyle Shanahan admitted that he thought he blew the Super Bowl, and he was asked about that in his opening presser with the Niners.
You know, when you're the coordinator of an offense or you're the head coach of a team, you're responsible for what happens out there. And I did believe we had a very good chance to win that game, especially at the end, and we didn't get it done. In terms of when you use the words, "I blew it," I don't look at it that way. I believe I missed an opportunity. And, we didn't get it done. I'll go back through every play through that for the rest of my life.
Thoughts, gentlemen, on the beginning of a new era in San Francisco?
I thought he came across in the press conference like he did with the media on throughout the week, which is very forthright and impressive. And he, in another answer to that question, he was very forthright, saying, "Look, I'm going to relive every single one of those plays the rest of my life. Of course, I think there's things that we could have done differently. I would think that about any loss." But he also said, "I didn't coach any differently in that game than I did the rest of the year. That's how we got there. I don't think we coached scared. I don't think we played scared." I'm paraphrasing a little bit here. And I think that's true. In the you wrote about it in your Get Off My Gridiron article this week, Wes, that Shanahan, the blame that he's gotten to me has been outsized for his place in that collapse.
I loved hearing that response from him today, that that's the way he's always coached. It's the way he's going to continue to coach. And just because a bunch of couch jockeys who never watched the Falcons once all year tuned into a
series. You never played the game.
No, you
either.
Didn't watch the Falcons all year. You slept on the Falcons all year, and now you want to criticize him for a couple plays in the Super Bowl. That's how he coaches. It's also why he's the best offensive coordinator in the NFL and perhaps the best offensive mind in the NFL.
Well, if anything, it is practice for what's to come because – you know, when you're the offensive coordinator and you don't face the press for more than about a half an hour a week tops, your head coach deflects and has to handle all that, and your players do too. It was an easy season for media-wise for Shanahan, but now you're with San Francisco. It is. They have got a long rebuilding job. It's not going to happen as quick as it did when you roll in and you have Matt Ryan as your quarterback and Julio Jones a wide receiver. We'll find out who he is.
He said he hoped he would have he hoped he had six Julio Joneses on this team, but that's not the case. A lot of work to do, and the team that he left, the Atlanta Falcons, a major shakeup there because of course they have to replace Kyle Shanahan, and they do that naming Steve Sarkisian, the new offensive coordinator. Sarkisian, who had a tumultuous era at USC as the head coach, undermined by some personal problems, later moved on to Alabama, was briefly their play caller in their BCS title game. Well, they got rid of the BCS. I think it was the college football playoff title game.
Whatever.
Loss to...
They lost to Clemson.
The Clemson. Very good. The Tigers. Seth Ryan's team. He is now the new offensive coordinator.
That's how they're known around the country.
That's how I know him.
The Seth Ryan team.
I know Clemson is the team. Rex changed his truck from Bills to Clemson colors.
Look, we're around the NFL podcast. You go
get
somewhere
off
else in the college business.
So Sarkisian takes over as the OC of the Falcons. And showing you what a savage business the NFL is, Richard Smith is no longer the defensive coordinator of the Falcons. So you go from up 28-3 late in the third quarter, people saying what a genius scheme you planned up. Maybe you got head coach written all over you. Now you're out. Defensive coordinator Richard Smith is being replaced with defensive line. Oh, is being replaced while defensive line coach Brian Cox is being let go by the team. A team source informed of the moves told Rap Sheet on Wednesday. Smith could stay on in the Falcons in an advisory role, Greg, but it is the end of his tenure as the DC, and that's just wild to think how savage the NFL can be.
You got to think they were going to make these moves regardless, which is weird, but talk about moving fast. I mean, when Robert Alford's running down the field for that pick six, it's Brian Cox who's holding – back Dan Quinn, and then they end up kind of embracing and jumping up and down, and a day later he's without a job.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the offensive side of the ball, which is you're probably more concerned with what's going to happen to last year's offense, that by all indication, that instead of trying to bring in Chip Kelly and have him do something that's not akin to Chip Kelly, Sarkisian, I talked to Chase Goodbread from 24/7 on our site. And he basically said you're going to see an offense that's similar because Sarkisian may be a little bit more into the running game, but loves running back screens. He's aggressive with certain pass concepts that are similar to Shanahan's. And they said today it's going to be a similar offense. We're not going to depart from what we did. That's the best news for Falcons fans. You don't want to try to change what happened.
The talent is there, and they're going to keep the zone running scheme. That's good. They're going to adjust to what the talent is.
Right, but he's never coached in the NFL. It's an extreme – I mean, he did, I believe, he was a quarterback coach of the Raiders in 2004. If he was a player, he would have major red flags. He basically you have sympathy for a man that struggled with addiction, but he almost kind of, helped ruin his career on some level because of that. And he just was at Alabama for a couple weeks and left the job because he didn't get along with his boss. So to me, it's a very risky hire. There's no reason to believe that this is going to work out smoothly. It reminds me of Bobby Petrino practice.
Maybe it's a bridge hire because you're so late in the year that you don't get the guy you want. But also, Pete Carroll, Dan Quinn, and Sarkisian are all friends.
Yep.
And that's how this business works.
Nick Saban, too.
Let's
there you go.
Move on and talk about the Arizona Cardinals. They're getting the band back together. One last ride at it. Carson Palmer confirmed Thursday that he would return for a 15th NFL season. He's now 37 years old. He told the team's official website that he wanted to make sure that he was physically ready for another NFL season. This comes a week after Larry Fitzgerald informed the public that he would come back for another season. So both of key players in Arizona's offense are back. And Chris Wessling, do you believe that this is amazing news for the Cardinals, who view themselves as a contender, but are they really?
They are a contender, and if not for a few breaks, would have been in the playoffs this year. Who knows what happens once you can get in the playoffs? Carson Palmer played the best ball of the season in December at the end of the year. Larry Fitzgerald was one of the best slot receivers in the league. That is excellent news. They have some decisions on defense, especially with three key free agents, Chandler Jones, Calais Campbell, and Tony Jefferson. So this is a team that believes it's in a Super Bowl window. They just have to make some really good decisions this offseason.
They're in that window. This is great news. I think you could win a Super Bowl with Carson Palmer if he played like he played. If you want to get people on Twitter upset, mention that Carson Palmer played well the last half of the season. Because everyone's like, no, you ruined my fantasy team. I got a million responses.
Same people who
right away.
Hate
no, he played
Kyle
well.
Shanahan for his play calling.
He played well.
I really enjoyed All or Nothing last year with Cardinals, getting to know that team better. They had a rough year last year, so I think it makes sense. You put them, see if the old band can still play the guitar, Mark.
I like that. That was well done, Dan.
Moving on, the Hall of Fame voted in their 2017 class.
The whole band's playing the guitar? Or
it's a very strange band. They're very guitar-oriented. No bass player. No drummer, no singer, just all guitar.
I mean, let's keep going with this. What's the next chapter in this bit? Can we keep – is there another angle we can come from potentially?
All right, Mark, let's talk some Hall of Fame.
Okay.
You know, comedy ombudsman.
you know, right. I mean,
Mark wants to get out of here. He's already looking at the clock.
Not at all.
It's February.
Not at all. Let's keep the listener engaged.
LaDainian Tomlinson, the headliner of the 2017 Pro Football Hall of Fame class, revealed Saturday at NFL Honors, which Greg gets goosebumps just thinking about being at that event for another year. The other inductees, Kurt Warner, Terrell Davis, Kenny Easley, Jason Taylor, Morton Anderson, and Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, notably snubbed, ya boy, Greg, Terrell Owens.
He's my boy?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm not the one who wrote a banger about him this week. West feels stronger than – look, I think he should have been a Hall of Famer. I think they have questionable decisions every year. Some good players wait. It's just as outrageous to me that Torrey Holt is not in the finalists even, as T.O. didn't make it. So they're punishing him, from what we've heard, for ex-coaches and teammates – basically burying T.O. behind the scenes, that they've been running almost like talking to his ex, you know, players and teammates and coaches, that they've been campaigning against them.
They're colluding a man out of the Hall of Fame. That is some petty stuff if that's what's actually happening.
Yes, it is.
It's the definition of petty. It's ridiculous. And Torrey Holt, fine, he had a good career. He's not a guy where, with the eye test, you know Terrell Owens is a Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
You know, right off the bat, he's one of the best players in the history of football. Torrey Holt is a borderline Hall of Famer. He was really good. He was never the best receiver in the NFL like T.O. was. This is ridiculous. And they want to talk about how teams couldn't wait to get rid of him. This isn't Brandon Marshall where they were like, oh, maybe we can salvage a third-round pick for him. Teams were lining up to get T.O. as much as they were lining up to get rid of him. That is ridiculous. I don't like that at all.
I'm with you, and let's not act like T.O. would be the first person that got into the Hall of Fame with some personality issues along the way as a player. I mean, Charles Haley deserved to be in the Hall of Fame, no questions asked, and had to wait a long time because of this kind of stuff. You have Andre Reed in the Hall of Fame, good player, not a better player than Terrell Owens. You've already blown it. You got to get him in there, and it's just a farce and a joke that carries on for another year.
And it might carry on further than that based on the fact he didn't make the final 10. I mean, the surprising thing, and when people complain about the Hall of Fame, you always want to say, well, who are you taking out of this class? This year probably wouldn't have been that tough. You take out Morton Anderson. I think it was a year where there weren't as many locks, and it felt like a year it's like, let's get in some of these guys, because if you start looking at the next few years, it starts being loaded. I think Terrell Davis and Kurt Warner were two guys that have kind of been waiting. They're very well liked. And sometimes with these years in the Hall of Fame, it's like, let's put these guys in now before it's too late.
And all due respect to Morton Anderson, who played his position very well for many, many years. But he is not a more vital, important, charismatic, productive player than Terrell Owens was.
No, that's
for the long career that he – I mean, geez.
Well, I don't think it's fair to put those – I see what you're saying. But, like, if you're going to put – if kickers are going to get in, and I think they should, Morton Anderson – it's easy to forget about these guys. Morton Anderson played for – like my entire life up until I was in college almost.
But that's, to me, that's not, I'd rather.
And he was good, by the way.
That's why I like Kurt Warner getting in, because he defined the NFL for a couple of those years. He won two MVPs, whereas Morton Anderson was like a B-plus kicker, B-plus, A-minus kicker for that just played for 25 years.
He was better than B-plus.
If you think about the reason Halls of Fame exist, you cannot tell the story. Just like in baseball, you don't have the home run king or the hit king in your Hall of Fame. You cannot tell the story of baseball without either of those guys. You can tell the story of football without Morton Anderson. You can't tell the story of football without Terrell Owens.
Moving on, gentlemen. Good talk there, guys. Really enjoyed that. Guys,
Jason Taylor sharp. And Kenny Easley.
I knew we needed to get past the Hall of Fame segment. It was
Jason Taylor and Kenny Easley are just like, what do we got to do to get a little attention?
Mark and I both
love, Italian?
Mark and I both love the Kenny Easley pick.
Yes.
When we were watching in the 80s, was a better player than Ronnie Lott.
Yep.
Okay.
He shouldn't have had to wait. Like, he's almost a comparable player to, maybe not quite
now
to six or 7 years, but that he was a first-team All-Pro four or five times. It's crazy he had to wait.
It's like the safety version of Gale Sayers.
It's a big win, and this will bring it around to baseball, okay. Dan. I know you love that.
You know I am the defender of the
hardball. It's a year for great, brilliant primes over the compilers. We don't need the compilers.
Okay. That's why Terrell Davis is in. I get it. Good
Kurt
call.
Warner man. And Easley.
Okay. Brilliance is always better than that.
Let's a little. Ooh, this is fun. Well, not for the men involved with this. The release roundup. I'll start with the Green Bay Packers, who part ways with both running back James Starks and cornerback Sam Shields. Wes, any surprise there?
Not one bit. James Starks is nearing the end. Maybe if his legs come back. But Sam Shields had concussion issues the entire season. He might not ever play again.
Maybe this clears the way for Eddie Lacy returning to
Green Bay.
Well, McCarthy wants him back. We'll see if Ted Thompson
They need some cornerbacks there. They're still recovering from that playoff loss and the sick burn from Jordan Peele at the NFL Honors Award against the Packers secondary.
Who will ever forget it?
By the way, what was it? All-time best host of the old NFL Honors. Not that there's been that many.
Get off Al Baldwin's.
Subjective.
No, wasn't even close.
Bruh.
Wasn't even close.
Anyway, what was the sick burn?
Well, if I could remember it exactly. I remember
here is the sick burn.
The playoffs got really great ratings this year. They really did. For instance, the NFC Championship was watched by 46 million people and the Packers secondary.
All right, now let's react as if we had heard it.
Glorious.
Wow.
To quote Mark Sessler, excellent showmanship.
You weren't wrong, Greg.
You know what I'm saying?
All right, moving on. Josh McCown released by the Browns. It didn't work out for Josh, who's always hurt, and then here comes the predictable bit. There's the quarterback of the Jets. Good one. I hope not, because he's always hurt, and he's not that good. And he's old.
Well, if there is going to be, as we mentioned on our NFL Network segment, a potential bidding war for Jimmy Garoppolo, I think there'll be a little bit of a bidding war in coaching staffs to get Josh McCown as a quarterback coach. Well, you laugh, but it is someone that has been talked about by multiple guys out there as a coach in the making. He was a coach for a while.
Okay.
No, he wants to play. That's why he's leaving Cleveland.
Well, he'll play for another year, but if he can't get a job or if he doesn't like that, he is going to be a valued coach
this
and a good coach in the NFL.
I got a plan. The Browns franchise McCown.
Like that?
And then trade him for a first-round pick. Bidding war.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, that would be great. If
that's how you win a bidding war.
And you franchise a guy you've just released.
Well, no, you take that back. You pull it off the wire. Franchise him, make him a top five paid quarterback. Because once you franchise somebody, you can trade him, right?
You could.
I mean, yeah.
Get tag and trade.
You're fired.
You know, Dan, this is not an argument for your front office, potential work.
Speaking of, annual bits.
You said bidding war.
You've got your gradual decline of Tom Brady. Eventually, you'll be right about that.
I will be right about
it. The inverse of that bit, though, is Chris Wessling's Josh McCown will eventually be good again bit. And that's, I don't know if that's going to end up being true.
There are two things going in opposite directions, but both cratering. Moving on.
Josh McCown's still a better quarterback than some quarterbacks who start in the NFL.
He's still in.
He is a good player.
He's a great player.
I'm sorry you missed the Blake Bortles and Brock Osweiler seasons this year.
Justin Gilbert, another former Brown. He has been let go by the Pittsburgh Steelers. A short, uneventful stay there. And is this another former Brown? DeQuell Jackson. He is no longer with the Colts. They cut the linebacker after he signed for a nice amount of money, I believe, in 2014, now 33 years old.
One thing Joe Thomas, I thought, had the best way to sum up Justin Gilbert's career in Cleveland and Pittsburgh. He tweeted, and Joe Thomas, by the way, not holding back on Twitter or in general with his comments.
You don't care.
I like his honesty. He said, if you don't like football, it doesn't matter how talented you are, your star will burn out quick. And Justin Gilbert was so poorly scouted by the Browns that they never actually met in person to find out where his passion level was, and that's why that team is picking first in the draft right now.
There you go. And finally, in the news, in transfer of power news, Bob Costas being replaced by Mike Tirico, my boy, as NBC's Olympics host. That ends a Costas tenure, Mark. Pay special attention. That spans way back to 92 as the Olympics guy, but into the 80s with NBC. And here is a statement from Costas, who's handled this pretty well, I believe. It has been both a privilege and an incredible personal and professional experience to have been part of NBC's Olympic coverage all these years. I'm especially appreciative of all the talented and dedicated people I worked for and with on those broadcasts. Class act, Mark, as he steps into the shadows forever.
Well, he has no bigger fan than Mike Tirico.
Well,
Well, no, but I think the thing is that here it reminds me a little bit of at the end of Al Davis's career when everyone went clickbaity and like, look how terrible Al Davis looks and what a joke he is, and his actual the substance of his career completely forgotten unless you were of a certain age and you remembered the bulk of his work. And I'll tell you why.
Who is
because
Bob Costas, Bob Costas,
everyone all the time. He's an easy target, and I get it. But Bob Costas was one of the youngest people ever hired to announce Major League Baseball. He blew it out of the park. He did a great job. He was one of the better broadcasters of all time. I don't think I grew up watching him, and I know the four of us like to, three of us out of the four like to joke about it. Wes thinks it's idiotic, but
I think Wes is
mystified by it, understandably. I honestly think that guys like Costas, guys like Al Michaels, some of these guys that are at the end of their career, a lot of people in sports media journalism would not be here if it were not the prime of their careers and what we and how they made you love sports more. Bob Costas, I grew up, I loved football more because of what he did on NFL Live back on NBC and the whole crew of them. So to me, yes, maybe I overvalue him now, his late work, but I wouldn't be sitting here if it weren't for a collection of those guys, Marv Albert, the rest of them. They're all in cahoots. They love each other because they know that they are good at what they do.
I love the analogy because Bob Costas is a luminary in the broadcasting business, just like Al Davis is one of the greatest figures in NFL history. Now I'm picturing Bob Costas drafting Jamarcus Russell and Rolando McClain and then burying Lane Kiffin in a press conference.
I'm gonna write the blog post about Mark's speech, and it'll say Sessler : Costas.
I mean, this is Greg is, this is classic. This is classic, like, minorly post-millennial nonsense from Greg, who basically has never, ever appreciated Costas because he didn't – you know, good for you, Greg.
I didn't even finish.
NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal telling us how broadcasting
Costas
works.
Costas like a late period Al Davis. That's the headline.
I feel sorry for you, Greg, that you cannot appreciate what Bob Costas brought to the world of sports.
Well, he's not leaving. Yeah, he said he's taking on a
Brokaw-like
role.
This is the right time. Well, Tom Brokaw, who is on television about once every 80 days right now.
Jumping in.
It is the right time, and NBC had enough foresight to bring in what is the best broadcaster of today.
They're
going from best to best. This is Manning to Luck. This is Montana to Steve Young.
Brady to Brissett?
Do you still think that?
Ooh, slice me off a piece of that Jake Brisket.
You still think that somebody's a bigger Bob Costas fan than you, though, after that?
I appreciate him. Maybe it's because I'm a little bit older than some of you guys. Like, I understand the...
I love Costas.
Well, I've never detected that on any level from you, but well, that's breaking news. Now he's breaking some news.
I just feel that it's utterly
smarmy nonsense.
I'm the insider now. How dare you?
I'm bad.
Not late period Costas.
Right.
He's on the soapbox talking about gun control during Sunday Night Football.
Right.
I'm talking about, you know.
We have to move on, but that stuff was fine in the 1980s and early 90s. And what happened with him, and it's going to happen to all four of us at some point too, if it's not already happening, is you're not moving on with the time. You're stuck at a certain period. Those soapbox things don't fly with 95% of the audience now. They did back in 1980.
Why do you think Chris Berman's out of work now?
Well, exactly. Things move on
without you if you don't adapt. All right, Wes, you wrote a banger. What's about the NFL Network in conjunction with NFL Films, their sound effects. They wire up players for many games during the season, but none. There are no more wires. The most wires, I should say, come on that final Sunday in February. And you had some takeaways from the sound effects edition of Super Bowl 51.
I must confess that when David Ely put this assignment on my desk, I thought, I've never even seen the show Sound Effects. I'm not trying to watch it. I guess I'll just go through the motions and write something. And, you know, somebody must have said something interesting. I'll write that up. And then I kept a notebook throughout the program, and it was a masterpiece theater of football broadcast from NFL Films, I guess, who does this production. And it was the anatomy of an epic comeback, just watching Julian Edelman is the star of the show, chatting throughout the game, but you get to hear from Tom Brady, and there are several sound bites in here that might give you the chills a little bit.
Well, let's hear some of them, Wes.
Cue it up there, new money.
We go through multiple channels to get things done here.
Let's go score and win this thing, baby. For your mom. For your mom, bro.
Who's that?
That was Julian Edelman right after the Patriots win the coin toss in overtime.
Dan rolled his eyes at that one.
Turns to Tom Brady and says, for your mom, bro.
I get it. I mean, the mom thing, I love my mom. We all love our moms. But, you know, it wasn't like if he would have thrown an interception, which he very nearly did, by the way, Tom Brady, would it mean that he let his mom down? No. I'm raining on the parade a little bit.
Yeah,
let's hear something else.
You know.
What else, Wes?
Let me set these up. That would be a better
way. That's what I was doing.
I know. You're a pro, and I totally fumbled.
You still have time. Let's. We could get this on
track. You're down 28-3, but you got a comeback in you.
Mark set it up. Here we go. It's 28-3. Let's hear from Tom Brady trying to rally the troops after it's 28-3.
There you go.
Let's show it now. Let's start showing some fight. Come on now. Let's go. Got to play tougher, harder, tougher, everything. Everything we got.
That was good. That was good.
That reminds me a lot. I'm trying to think of – it's one NFL Films clip they use all the time. I actually said it to you in the Super Bowl press box at one time. They always use it for Brady. It's
auxiliary.
Like, are we gonna lay down? Are we going to fight? Like that's the Tom Brady clip that they always use. Now they can always
– I saw that this morning, actually. He's stalking up and down the sideline. His teammates are sitting down, and I would think that makes a big difference when you have the king, number one guy in your team, a call to arms like that. What else we got, Wes? That was a good setup.
That was when
flip.
The number one guy in our team, David Ely, had me start to write an article that went 1,000 words in and was never seen by another human being.
I don't know if it's going to catch on, but Kevin Patrick challenged me on my use of ankle catch for Julian Edelman's catch. So I've come up with Incredelman.
Okay.
The Incredelman is the name of the catch. But here's what's cool. When he catches it, as he's trying to pull it off of Robert Alford's ankle, they catch him on mic going, I caught it, I caught it, while he's still in the motion of catching it.
Let's hear it, Sid.
I caught it. I caught it.
I caught it. Crazy, I swear to God.
No way.
That's cool.
It's him and Brian Poole looking at opposing scoreboard screens, and Brian Poole, the Falcon quarterback, is like, no way, no way. And he's like, no, I swear to God, I caught it.
I liked it made me think higher of Dont'a Hightower. Not that I didn't think high of him, but that he was really like the vocal sort of leader of that defense. And at one point, when I think it was 28-9, and he was just like, no more mistakes, no more my bads. Like, we have to be perfect now. There's no more margin of error at all. And that was basically the point where he gets the sack fumble.
I like Dont'a Hightower, by the way. Was that setting up your last one?
No.
Okay, good.
Still set up.
He did not go to the parade.
Yeah.
Because he said he's had enough of cold and wind and rain and sleet, which
I get it.
He'd be a terrible mailman, by the way.
And he's not going to the White House. But
I don't know if that team's going to the White House when it's all said and done.
I didn't want some sandwiches. But he didn't go to the White House for Obama either a couple years ago, so there's no political tie to that. He just doesn't want to go. He already did it with Alabama. And you have one more, Wes, right?
Jackie Slater, Hall of Famer, and Matthew Slater's father, passionately testifying on Tom Brady's greatness.
They got the best quarterback in the history of the National Football League, bar none. I don't disrespect anybody, but Tom Brady's the best quarterback to ever play the game.
I wish I talked like that.
I know. It's
pretty bar none.
I like bar none. I like
ever played a game.
Let's bring back bar none. Let's start using it all the time.
I want to talk better.
The best line in that whole episode, though, was Mo Sanu was one of the guys mic'd up, so see a lot of him. And he's feeling his oats in the second quarter after Robert Alford's pick six. They go up 21-0. He says, they ain't never met nothing like this. Mm. And he's talking to Taylor Gabriel, who has a nervous look in his eye, and he goes, it's Tom Brady, though.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and he goes, we're going to put 40 up on them. And Gabriel's just like, we got to.
Hey, if that didn't hook you in, here's the good news. If you're upset that you missed it, this will be played 7 million times.
No, sound effects. This show every year, the hour-long sound effects after the Super Bowl,
absolutely,
really is one of the best things NFL Films does every year. It's always awesome. And the saddest, the one that stuck with me the most from that entire show was after Jake Matthews' hold, after that play, you know, Matt Ryan thinks he got them into field goal range again, and he goes, what the guys, he's like, did you hold? And he asked Levitre that, and Levitre is like, no, I didn't. And Matthews is just kind of a foot away from him, not saying anything. And it was tough rewatching this
Brutal.
Game. I felt for Jake Matthews. For people that killed Kyle Shanahan, I think Jake Matthews, a couple holding calls, a lot of pressures. If you're looking for, there's a million different people that struggled when they collapsed. But to me, Jake Matthews, especially in that offensive line, is going to be living with that for the rest of his life.
I'll have an end around column tomorrow about the different things that the Falcons, if they just would have pulled off one of them, probably would have won the Super Bowl. And Matthews, sadly, is a starring role because he had two holding calls. One after the onside kick after the first Patriots touchdown, and then, of course, the killer a couple plays after Julio's big catch in the fourth quarter.
Because I love our listeners so much.
Look at you.
I've included links to all these videos, too. So if you don't get a chance to watch it on NFL Network, pull up my article, NFL.com/Wessling, the sound
Perfect.
Effects article. The links are all in there to the videos if you want to see them.
Beautiful work, Wes. Well done. So there you go.
Fine job.
Sound effects. Check it out, airing over and over this offseason on NFL Network. Now,
this is the gift that keeps on punishing you.
Well, Dan, you know, you were out yesterday.
That was not an accident, by the way.
Right, good day to be out. I think it was eight or nine times in a row with these various million football lives with the Patriots. What's it called? The America's Game. Over and over. One Super Bowl, then the next.
Football lives.
Lawyer Malloy.
Patriots Dynasty Day on NFL Network.
Yeah, that was, I steered clear of that channel on my DirecTV at home as well. All right, let's settle up, by the way, some sandwich props from Super Bowl 51, our annual preview show. We do some props, and so let's go through them. Sandwich props.
Sandwich proposition update.
Oh, my God.
People really hate that drop.
No, you know what happened, Wes? That is the new sandwich drop, and I'll tell you why. Because I got several tweets from people saying I had to turn off the podcast because the apple chomp. Do we still have that one?
That was it.
No, this is different, Greg. Trust me. I'm the one.
It made my skin crawl.
So this is a punishment to those of you that are so weak-willed that you couldn't handle the last chomp. This one's even more gross.
I don't know what the end game is here, but that was hideous.
And let me tell you something. That's a pickle being eaten? If you cross me, if I get one more tweet from somebody saying they can't handle that drop, what are we going to do, Sid?
Something about a banana.
The banana chewing drop. You don't want anything close to the banana drop.
No, you really don't.
But after that, it's someone chewing on someone's human femur. I mean, where are we going with this?
Don't at me, bro.
It's just awful.
I'm just saying, tough up. You pay literally nothing for this podcast. Deal with an apple.
You're saying millennials are a generation that lacks toughness, Dan?
Maybe.
Whoa.
And you know who you are. If you're listening right now and you came at me on Twitter about having to turn off the podcast, I don't know who you are, but you know who you are. All right, here we go. We'll start with Mark Sessler. Mark, you finished 4-5 for the Super Bowl, which is about where everybody else finished.
Since none of us got anything right.
Yeah. Here's the first one. There will be no Super Bowl 51 winner.
Oh, yeah.
We all...
They not true.
It did go to overtime. So there was a moment where there was, you know, and of course leading up to the game, some of the unrest, social unrest around this country, it seemed like you had a shot at this.
A lot of people thought there was a shot, and in the end there was no shot.
Okay, so that cost you three. Your next one, Lady Gaga will do something during the halftime show that will immediately qualify as legitimate breaking news beyond the sports world. This is a fun person to ask this. Wes, we had decided that you would be the independent arbitrator on this. Did Lady Gaga do anything that really had the entire world talking?
No. I mean, she jumped. Like she jumped off a roof, but didn't really jump off a roof. She did some spider monkey crawl. I don't know.
If she would have jumped off the roof, that might have qualified.
I think something would have had to have gone wrong with jumping off the roof for it to go breaking.
Always thought that you were like hinting at Gaga suffering some type of mortal injury.
It's more like I feel every time I do one of these, it's like, oh, that wasn't oniony enough. So it's like I'm now just resorting to like natural disaster and like massive issues. So
very strange. And here was your big winner, and it was a big one. Super Bowl 51 will go into overtime. And we discussed that, and it is. Super Bowl 51, the first Super Bowl. So you won sandwiches off both Dan and Greg. Moving on to Greg Rosenthal, who came in under 500, 3-4. Greg, that will hurt you in the standings.
Well, that's a good tease for later. I'm happy to go over all the overall standings after this is over.
Okay, good. Deion Lewis.
You and Bob Costas can go over it. How about that?
Deion Lewis will finish with over 100 yards from scrimmage. Yeah.
Right church, wrong pew, you know?
Where did he finish?
Had about 27 yards or something like that.
I mean,
James White, who has a very similar role, obviously, basically, the receiving back ends up getting jobbed for the MVP award.
Whoa.
I don't know about getting jobbed. That's
I think Tom Brady earned that sucker.
I agree.
Let me just get. I just,
I'm just saying he had the most catches in Super Bowl history. He had 130 yards. He had a game-winning touchdown. He had a pretty epic Super Bowl game.
Just for posterity,
James White.
Deion Lewis had 27 yards rushing and 2 yards receiving, and he got injured in the fourth quarter. 29 yards. Okay. Matt Ryan will throw for over 350 yards. He only threw the ball 23 times, and that's what cost you. 17 completions for 284 yards, which is pretty interesting. Well, who knows? Greg, if the Falcons would have won that coin toss and they marched down the field, maybe you get that 350.
You'll have to settle for a fifth Lombardi trophy.
That would have been a pyrrhic.
It's not exactly like second prize to have your team win the Super Bowl.
That would have been tough. But I do thank Wes for not jumping in on either one of those, so that helped me.
I don't think he had a choice.
Wasn't there.
Oh, yeah.
Finally.
I forgot that. That was the bit.
Finally.
Thanks, guys.
Finally, Dan Hansis, that's me, NFL media insider Dan Hansis, I should say.
ATN media insider, Dan Hansis. For the truth, go to the zoo. Zoozer in the morning.
Was that a chimp in the background at one point?
Ask Sydney. She put it together.
No, it was a dolphin.
Yeah.
Oh, a dolphin.
ATN media insider. That even the title doesn't make any sense.
Around the NFL media?
None of that makes sense. 4-3, the Falcons will score an opening drive touchdown. Greg and Mark took me up on that, and that didn't work out. I believe they went 6-out. The Super Bowl 51 winner will not have an official White House visit. And it's funny, I don't even remember this, even though it was a week ago. Greg, you did not take me on that.
No, I don't think they will. And I think it's looking good for you and I that we were on right there. I would have to
Why do you
guess.
Say that?
I just think that with so many players not wanting to go, if you get it to the point where it's at least half the team doesn't want to go.
That's still an official visit, though.
No, I'm saying that.
Yeah. Oh, they'll pull out.
But you would say, though, let's say Brady, Belichick, and 19 players go. We're calling an official.
Yes.
Oh, of
okay,
course. Okay. Yeah.
Well, Brady and Belichick are going to be on the Joint Chiefs of Staff soon. So that's right. Going.
I mean.
Yeah, congratulations on that, by the way, Greg. Big win. For
what are you
current
talking
administration.
About? Hey, look, if they – Yeah, they could improve things.
Here comes more tweets. I haven't heard enough sandwich bites, by the way. I'm gonna punish those people.
I have.
Punish. I love it.
More. No, that is.
Keep your politics out of the podcast, man.
Have fun with your new podcast.
That's it. So where are the standings at, Greg? And now 3 or 4 years into the race.
Wesseling 75-76. Right?
No, Wes got one right because Wes took Mark on the Super Bowl will not have a winner. So
okay,
well, this Steven
is the,
Steven.
This is the all-time winner. This does count.
Oh, it counts.
It's
everything.
Counting the Super Bowl.
Okay, good.
Mark, I guess, would be bringing up the rear of the four of us at 62 and 68.
Yeah, I've had quite a comeback, but I was just awful out of the game.
It shows with the less wins and losses, you just don't jump in as much.
Well, it reflects the early stages of my play. Not to say that I got a whole host of things completely wrong, so I'm not getting any better.
Dan doing well, 82 and 72.
That's what I'm talking about, baby.
And I am at 89 and 75.
All right, so I picked up a little ground on you, but you're still first place. And this game ends the moment one of us quits, gets terminated, or the podcast mysteriously disappears when someone on the third floor listens to literally one episode. So whenever that happens and the show either is no longer the four of us or we're canceled outright, which I'm not saying, this is not me hinting that something's going on. I'm just saying if that were to happen, that's when the game ends. If people are looking for what is the end game here?
Right, and then Nick Fortier, who runs this wonderful sister site, is out of an unpaid job.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say he takes one of our chairs after we get let go.
That's good. It's like
the gold standard.
GoGetMyLunch.org, by the way.
I think a football podcast might be beneath the gold standard.
Mm. Hmm. Sydney, by the way, is 0-4 all time. So you either need to
for that reminder, Greg.
Jump off the Ziggy Ansah train. I don't know.
All right, moving on. We've got to keep moving, guys. A lot to get to. The supersized edition of the Around the NFL podcast, post-Super Bowl edition. The top five calls of the 2017 season. Oh, I love this. We took it seriously. As if you're a listener of the podcast and you listened all season long, you know that when we would play different radio calls on our Sunday podcasts and our Tuesday podcasts for the primetime games, we would mark them off, or Sydney, I should say, would mark them off when we let her know we liked a call. Out of those mark-offs, it came to a nice group, a dozen calls, and then the four of us got together in a pre-prod meeting, I call it.
Pre-prod.
Pre-prod. And we whittled that 12 down to five. And here now, got the paper in my hand. This is the list. If you are in the business, in the play-by-play business or the color man business, this is the piece of paper you want to be on come February, because that means that you are doing something. You're standing out from all of your peers.
That is absolutely.
They don't even know this podcast exists.
Well, they will. We had 7 million people listen, 8 million people since we started this.
Another million just joined.
Listen to the show on Sunday. So you don't know. Zoli might have been listening. Old shirtless, pantsless Zoli.
It's worth mentioning you have to be a radio man. You're not going to be on a television show and get in on this. You're not.
We had some TV calls.
Yeah.
Every once in a while we would. But
I think Zoli's at a kegger right now.
Zoli's bombed. All right, here we go. Number five. The call is from Mike Keith of WGFX. The play call was the game-winning field goal by Ryan Succop in Kansas City to keep Tennessee's playoff hopes alive send the Chiefs to an unlikely loss.
Brinkley to snap. Kern to hold. Snap, set, kick on the way. Good! Ryan Succop has given the Titans a 19-17 win at Arrowhead. Oh, my goodness. 8-6 has never felt better. And I don't think Ryan Succop has ever felt better.
Wes, now this was a major source of consternation in the pre-prod meeting. You didn't think this belonged in the top five.
Well, generally, who would have thought that in the year 2017, radio calls wouldn't be that compelling? That was my general sentiment. And the second sentiment was really tough to get on this list when that makes it.
Wait a second.
I loved how he was like, God! Yeah.
In fact, Sydney, can we clip off when he goes, God! In fact, I just want to hear that part one more time.
God!
So that was number five. And you know what it beat out? By a hair, it beat out the Kansas City play-by-play guy noting that someone had found the sweet nectar of the end zone.
And Bob Costas announcing the Preakness.
And Costas, the Preakness, so...
Best moment of Succop's life. Better than being Mr. Irrelevant back in the NFL draft.
And some of these are sad in hindsight, because the next week the Titans played like crap, and then Marcus Mariota broke his leg. But these teams in the moment,
right,
they're special moments for the teams. Number four, special.
8-7 never felt so bad the next
next week. Number four, the Cleveland Browns make the list. And you know the only way the Browns are making a list like this is if something really bad happened to them or their one victory of the season, and that's what we're talking about. Jimmy Donovan of WKRK, God bless him. This was his call when the field goal was missed by who missed the field goal, Mark? Little Browns trivia.
The Chargers field goal kicker.
Nick Novak?
Josh Lando?
Oh, Josh Lando.
Lambo.
Goes wide right, ensuring on Christmas Eve of all days that the Browns would not go winless in 2016.
9 seconds and the clock is running. It's down to 7 seconds. They set it down at the 35. It's down to 4, 3, 2, 1. They got it off. The kick on the way. End over end. The kick is up, and it is no good! And the Browns have won it!
All right.
A 45-yard field goal, no good, at the absolute last tick of the clock. And it's 0-14, no more, on Christmas Eve. The Browns are a winner.
People, yes, there it is. There's the applause. People will be surprised to know this. And, Mark, tell me if I'm wrong. That was the angriest I ever saw you in the newsroom when that happened, which people will be surprised by.
Yeah,
you didn't
they
like the celebration around your team.
No, I don't even remember what all the nuances were, but it's not a pleasant place to watch Browns games in general.
I hear you on that. I hear you. Especially this season, because that became part of the newsroom culture, was the Browns, the winless season, and how
right.
close they came to it. So there was like a fun kind of cathartic celebration in the newsroom. But for you, Mark, serious-minded Browns fan, it was kind of still kind of sad.
I don't claim that it was, you know, I mean, every day I'll say this about at least one or two of my reactions. They're a mess, and that was a messy reaction.
That reminds me of what you said during the Super Bowl, which is that if the Browns ever did make it to the Super Bowl, you're actually going to have switched places with Simone. You'll sit in the crowd, and Simone will cover the game.
That's
right.
Great.
Simone is my wife. She will be forced into writing articles during the Super Bowl while I enjoy it and set things on fire. I'm just going to set myself on fire for the game.
I am not working if the Jets make the Super Bowl.
Thank you.
I'm going to the game.
Right.
But I am not working.
I get it.
It's not like you have an option. You don't have an
option. Oh, I'll have an option. Well, it's not going to happen either. So.
Right. Yeah. It's fantasy.
That's why it was a weird – yeah.
Number three. The New England Patriots, they deserve to crack this list. And you would think the play call that we played on Sunday night the Patriots winning the game in overtime would get it. But no, Bob Soucy and our boy, Scott, totally comfortable with public nudity, Zolak, with the call on Danny Amendola's two-point conversion late in the fourth quarter to tie the game.
57 seconds to go, a two for the tie, trips to the left, Brady under center. Tom takes the step. Quick throw to Amendola. Screen left. A flag as he reaches across the goal line for a score. There is a penalty marker on the play.
They're offsides. That's in.
Conference by the officials. It's a tie game in Super Bowl 51.
Hodgepodge for everybody. Give me some. What are you looking at, Beetle? I can't believe it.
Someone that's familiar with that market can let us know who Beetle is.
What are you looking at, Beetle? Is my favorite line.
Yeah, we gotta find it. If someone, you know, follows Scott Zolak or knows the answer to this, just
almost,
get the information.
You almost not want to know too, and just forever
right.
be curious.
I
like,
mean, it's
who he's taunting there.
That makes the list because of unhinged homerism. It's not because it's the cleanest call. It's just you can't believe that anyone in a booth is behaving this way.
Zolak proved himself to be the number one homer in the NFL this season, without a doubt. So this was a little nod to him, giving him the bronze medal. I will say it is interesting that's coming out of New England, because I know in New York, at least, and Mark, you know this, they're very there's not a lot of homers.
Not
in
at all
market,
in New York, no.
Because that's for whatever reason, that market has always been more along the lines of playing it down the middle, even if there is a slight leaning one way or
because
the other.
Because there's
no
not
rooting.
One team either. I think that's part of it, because there's Mets, Yankees, there's Jets, Giants. So
but why would that affect?
I think New York is legitimately, like, it is the launching pad to national work,
right.
National careers. Boston, TV-wise, it's not that way. But you might be
I guess
right.
I mean partly because, like, there's a lot of non-Yankees and Mets fans
right,
there listening. You know what I mean? Like, teams
far
that,
less provincial of
right.
a city.
But every call we're listening to has a tinge of homerism, and New York, you're right, does not.
Moving on, number two, and this is going to surprise people, because I think a lot of people, when they heard this call and it came very early in the season, week one, in fact, said, oh, the race is over. And, you know, we thought it was over, too.
People were saying that.
The street's talking. Give it to Kevin Harlan, because in a game, a wipeout of a game where the 49ers embarrassed the 49ers in a shutout win on the late Monday night game in week one, Harlan set the country on fire the next morning on social media with his call of an idiot fan who had run onto the field.
Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat and a red shirt. Now he takes off the shirt. He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. Now he runs the opposite way. He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. The 20. They're chasing him. They're not going to get him. Waving his arms, bare-chested. Somebody stop
Look
that
out.
Man.
Here comes the blue coat, Kevin.
Oh, they got him.
Here comes
They're coming
the blue
from the
coats.
Left. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
Oh, that was the most exciting thing to happen tonight.
I always like, because he gives, it's a professional call of a fan on a field, but then he's like, to the 50, to the 40, this guy is drunk, to the 30, yeah. the 20. I always love that.
He loves, it's an example of someone I think just absolutely loves what he does. Like, he turned that into something so special. It's like, not, very few people have that kind of fun with it.
And it's a reminder, and since I'll never get a chance to really talk about Jeff Fisher's, you know, head coaching career maybe ever again. It's a reminder. How did the Rams lose the only two games of the season that the 49ers won were against the Rams? And they did. Their offense didn't get 200 yards in either one of those games. That's almost impossible.
Horrendous, horrendous. And check out Kevin Harlan. He'll be all over March Madness. So that guy's got a good career, and he deserves it. But the man who takes the cake, and I'll tell you what, he's the one man on the list, probably doesn't want to be on the list, but we love him. We say this with peace and love. That Bob Lamy of WFNI in Indianapolis earned the number one spot of our calls of the year with this gorgeous gem in week three against the Chargers.
The Colts win it 26-22.
Game's over.
Game is finally over.
Round of applause for everybody. Bob Lamy, people. Drops an F-bomb live on air.
It's like every Sunday night football game in this room.
Lamey. I'm glad he didn't lose his job over that, because people have lost their job for less. All right, finally. This is what you came here for. Mark Sessler wrote a banger. What we're looking forward to this offseason, besides Tony Romo blather.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Blather.
So
that's exactly right.
Mark came up with a nice list here. I think it goes about 10, 12 deep. With a bonus section entitled Ultra Tedious Storylines I Refuse to Entertain. We'll get into what exactly
that was really
that
the
means.
Article.
I was
going to
say,
write.
It almost felt like the whole thing was a
that's all
was
it
a
was.
Preamble to set up that
just
graph
leading you to
end.
Water. Yep.
All right, so let's go down the list and we'll decide whether Mark's on point or completely just writing out of his ass.
Well, that's very possible.
First one. And by the way, why beyond Romo? Why the conceit at the top? Explain to us.
I'm already completely exhausted with the handling of Tony Romo. At one point, he's going to be traded. That's one article. Let's keep it at one. Why do we need to have 4,000 think pieces and lists and other landing spot bits? I mean, we get it.
I think you're right. You're absolutely right. All right, so no Romo talk, but you know what? One of the storylines, we talked about this one, Shanahan's fix-it-upper by the Bay. How does Kyle take that two-win team and turn it into a respectable bunch? You're excited, according to your copy,
all
to
right,
track
well,
this offseason.
I do think it's exciting. New coaches actually are one of my most – I think it makes the offseason interesting.
Treasured institutions?
Out, I think if you find out who they are, but real quick, because we all think – I think Kyle Shanahan's riding in. I get the Super Bowl thing, but as this sort of wonder boy based on his entire lineage and career and everything else, and this is a very tough job – to turn this team around quickly. And this is a pretty exhausted, angry press corps that covers the Niners that don't have 6 years of patience in them, so it'll be an interesting dynamic.
Although I think they're kind of impressed that Jed York pulled off, even though John Lynch is a strange hire in a lot of minds, I think you're kind of like, wow, Jed York got John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. That's actually that's pretty good. Their roster, though, I mean, they're going to have to – they're starting from scratch. It's
especially like, if Jeremy Curley sneaks out of the building.
$80 million under the cap and I was looking at the free agent list this year. It is the weakest crop of free agents I've ever seen, because the salary cap keeps going up in by a decent amount every year. So teams are signing their good young players. Mm-hmm. This is a bad year to have a lot of money under the cap.
Well, as such a lover of coordinators, though, what do you think about the decision that Kyle Shanahan's not even going to have an offensive coordinator?
Troubling. No,
I think Connor Orr wrote a great piece about first-year head coaches when they go through all this and then they sit in their chair and they think, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, adding a lot of extra responsibility onto your plate when you haven't been a head coach for Kyle Shanahan, who's going to find out there's all these other things he has to do? By the way, he comes from a father, Mike Shanahan, that probably told him everything. So more experience than others.
Next up, what becomes of Jimmy G? I like this one. In fact, yes, our NFL Network hit that you could watch on Friday on Up to the Minute. This is the subject. Garoppolo, the backup quarterback of the Patriots. The Pats have a position here. He has 1 year left on his deal where they can make a play, trade Garoppolo with Tom Brady, obviously still playing so well, and the Patriots defending champions now. The question becomes, Mark, and I'll start with you, where does he end up? Where is he come September? Is he in Cleveland, Mark?
Cleveland's going to have to give up a lot, because it sounds like there's at least three teams that are very serious about making a run for him.
Which three teams? 49ers, Bears, and Browns?
Top three teams in the draft. So there isn't a team sitting at 20 that has no – I mean, they all have great position to outbid each other.
Kyle Shanahan, one of the reasons he left the Browns is because they disregarded his analysis on that quarterback class. He had Derek Carr and Jimmy Garoppolo rated above Johnny Manziel and Teddy Bridgewater. They didn't pay attention to him. He left. Kyle Shanahan now in San Francisco. We've seen reports that the Browns are already planning to trade for Garoppolo. We've seen reports that the Bears have made him their number one offseason priority. And Thomas Dimitroff, who had Shanahan for 2 years and had his ear, said it best. Until you find a quarterback, the search for him consumes you. There will be a windfall of draft picks in New England, I think. I think he's going to bring more than a first-rounder.
Wow.
And once the bidding gets wild, I think it could go out of control.
He is the most attractive guy on the market in terms of, you know, Tony Romo or Cutler or Tyrod Taylor could be in the mix. I don't know. I feel like if the Browns said today, we'll give you the number, what is it, 12 or 14?
12.
12 pick for the draft. I don't know if the Patriots would wait around. I think they would just be like, all right, let's do it today.
Well, here's that offer, Mark. You tell me if you do it or if you're the GM. Not the first overall pick, but the Browns' number 12 pick, which they obtained from the Eagles, of course, and a third rounder next year for Jimmy G and a fifth rounder in 2018.
I would do it in a second, and I'll tell you why. Because if it works, then it doesn't matter what the cost was. If it doesn't work, it's no different than going into the season with RG3. They've got a ton of draft picks. The Browns keep having.
It's a big.
Well, here's
it's
the thing.
A whiff if it doesn't work.
Are the Browns?
Yeah, but
are the Browns
going to
draft
first round picks? They have million picks.
Are you going to keep 15 rookies again? You can't. I like their idea, but like at one point you have to go for the quarterback. And Jimmy G has been well trained. By all indications, it's not Brock Osweiler part two. And you got to swing for the fences. You cannot go into the season with nobody.
I guess my point was that. It's just because they have X amount of roster space, it's still there's a lot of risk involved to give up a number 12 pick.
There
but
is.
I think it's worth it.
Right. Daniel Jeremiah in his latest mock has the Browns taking a tight end at number 12. So you want not who wouldn't even be your number one tight end, or do you want to go for the quarterback? I give up the 12th pick for Jimmy G plus a third or whatever in a second.
These rebuilding teams at the top of the draft, the Browns, the 49ers, the Bears, they don't want Tony Romo. They don't want Jay Cutler. They don't want Tyrod Taylor. If the Browns offer that, the Patriots are going to shop it to the 49ers and Bears and say
yep.
Beat it.
Keep an eye on the Saints. I really think the Saints were
I don't
one
buy
of the,
that first.
Were one
second.
Of the teams
That's
that were really high on Garoppolo going into the draft. Sean Payton, Eastern Illinois connection. They've been looking pretty hard at trying to find their next quarterback. I don't think that's that crazy.
I don't buy it for a minute. You're going to trade a first-rounder when your defense sucks every year?
And one more point on the Patriots side. Is there any thought in that building that we could have a Montana to Steve Young transfer of power? Why would we give that up if we think that highly about Jimmy G? Now, the good problem to have here is that Brady doesn't look close to the end of the line, but he is going to be 40. I think that's interesting, too, because they are so well set up for another decade with a backup they believe in. But Brady obviously isn't close to the end yet, but he is 40, so the end could come quickly.
You're just not. They traded Richard Seymour. They traded Drew Bledsoe for obvious reasons. They've traded all sorts of guys when value is there. It's never going to be this high ever again.
Right. I think they would have thought about offering Jimmy Garoppolo a weird sort of contract where it was the bases were low for a few years and then it spiked up with an option. If Tom Brady wasn't this good this year, if he was just – if he had that gradual decline where he was like the eighth best quarterback, but he was too good for them to do that.
Right. The cost of keeping Garoppolo instead of trading him is messing up your salary cap by paying two high-end quarterbacks.
Moving on, another quarterback. This is really well put, Mark. The courting of Cousins. Nice alliteration.
I don't even remember writing that, but apparently I did.
Mark, you don't expect Kirk Cousins to play for anyone but the Redskins. But at the same time, Wes, it seems like things are a little choppy in D.C. about the quarterback position. Does it surprise you that this is something that's even something we need to be tracking like this?
Yes. I love that Mark put that quote in there because I think this is one of the most overblown storylines of the offseason. He's going to be the quarterback for the Redskins, and the GM's quote is telling. I don't think it's as complicated as everyone wants to make it, and we'll get together with his agent. We'll come up with an agreement. That's what's going to happen. He's going to play for the Redskins.
And it'll probably be on the tag, though, right? Yeah. They said that last year, too. Bruce Allen said, well, we're very confident we're going to get a contract.
This idea that other teams want Kirk Cousins, so the Redskins will just say, oh, take him. Yeah, that's fine.
Well, and someone remind me of the rules of this because I feel a little uncomfortable about this idea because if you franchise a guy the first time, I think it's the average of the top five salaries at the position. And if you do it a second time, it's something even more extreme, isn't it?
It's a 20% bump, I believe, which would make Kirk Cousins
make like
be a
24
one-year,
million or something.
Yeah, 24, yep. 25 million.
That's and if anyone wants to come get him, they have to give up a lot draft pick. Why? Is it two firsts, I believe?
Yeah, if you don't make him the exclusive, I think they would just make him even the exclusive tag where you can't even give up.
And if that happens, picks. If he makes 25 million, you know who's doing really well for himself? Kirk Cousins, who will have essentially signed a 2-year, $45 million contract.
Right.
Kirk Cousins.
Crazy.
It's good to be a quarterback. Cleveland's offseason strategy next up on Mark's list. And we talked about that with Jimmy G. But what else? What else, Mark?
Well, I think that's really the big part of it. Are you going to use the picks to get a quarterback or are you going to try to continue to build around a non-quarterback?
Next up on the list, Adrian Peterson on the move. That's a question mark. He's turning 32 next month. Was hurt and, we didn't get to see much of him at all last year. Where would this guy end up, Greg, in your mind, if he hit the open market? And would he have a healthy market to choose from?
I mean, he'll have suitors. He's not going to make a ton of money because he's an aging running back. I mean, it depends what you count a ton of money. I'd take $6 or $7 million, in a one-year contract or,
two
for
there.
12. Give it to me, baby. The Giants make a lot of sense to me. That just pops off my head.
He's a fascinating player because I think we don't know what percentage he is of what he was a couple of years ago. I think he can still play, but the NFL has moved to an era where his skill set doesn't fit most offenses. He's a net negative in the passing game right now.
Look at the Super Bowl. I mean, look at the Patriots.
Exactly.
All right. And finally, and you could read all of Mark's piece on NFL.com/Sessler. That's the plug that you had asked for privately, Mark, before the show.
Well, that just throws you to a rather jumbled author page. So, yes.
Anyway, here's the bonus. Mark, I would love for you to read this list in full. Ultra-tedious storylines I refuse to entertain. Let's hear it, Mark.
All right, number one, Blake Bortles, a, quote, new man in Jacksonville. We're all tired of that. Number two, Browns haven't lost faith in RG3. Give me a break. Number three, Roethlisberger still toying with retirement. Give me a break, part two. Number four, Dom Capers building, in quotes, tougher Packers defense.
Teflon, Dom.
That's coming.
Number five, Hackenberg ready to make the leap in Florham Park. Number six, Bill O'Brien, : we can rock with Brock. Number number seven, Tom Brady, : cantaloupe terrible for human digestive system.
That's
number
coming.
Eight, EJ Manuel, in quotes, Peyton-like in Bill's minicamp. Forget about it. Number nine, Brandon Marshall, : Josh McCown will take Jets to promised land. And number 10, Ndamukong Suh, Patriots vulnerable after free agent exodus. Never. Not writing about any of that.
This is definitely the – everything was building to that paragraph.
That's all.
That's why you wrote this. And I very entertaining, Mark. Good stuff, everybody. That's today's show.
I'm going to track that list and see if Mark writes anything on any of those.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the off-season articles he writes about the Chargers' comfy confines.
It's easy that he's in February.
Very excited about
it. I really want to go there. I
tracking
say,
that development.
Come late June when we're looking for
content. How are you? What's going to happen in the off-season at the confines?
Well, I will feign sickness.
Oh, I just realized. Well, Mark will be not at his desk. Where's Mark? He's on the phone with the operations officer of the Chargers, and you're doing a long form on this new soccer arena.
Whatever it takes.
I can see it now.
Whatever it takes.
All right. Good stuff. All right. And people who are curious, what is our off-season taping schedule? All right. I think, what are we doing next week, guys? What do we want to do next week? We're going to do two or three shows.
This is a conversation we want to have
on
the air.
We're going to do it right now.
Let's settle this.
Pull back the curtain.
Monday, Wednesday, Thursday.
That's typically what we did in the off season. In very quiet times, sometimes we'd back it off to twice a week. But not yet.
We're going to do probably three shows next week, unless we do two. But we won't do less than two, but we won't do more than three.
And then after, you know, once we get close to the combine, we'll be three shows a week until late June or so, mid June.
Then it's a total shutdown mail-in.
No, then we back it off to two a week.
Yeah. But you're not
people coming in and out.
We're not going to be gone long enough ever for you guys to like start to miss us. This break from Sunday to today's show, you'll never have to wait that long for a show.
That is correct.
I promise you, unless something terrible happens, at which point gogetmylunch.org becomes finalized.
By the way, stick around after the show for some real breaking news.
There you go. That's a good tease. All right, let's get out of here. This is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, and new money behind the glass. Till Monday.
Mark Sessler of the Around the NFL podcast here. It's a bit of a post-show breaking news scenario. We learned recently that internationally acclaimed economist Hans Rosling passed away this week. And sad news, of course, the world mourns. And we have on the line our economic expert, Mr. F., high school economics teacher in The Hague, the Netherlands. Mr. F., are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Mark. Mr.
F. Obviously, sad news. Can you maybe talk a little bit about the reaction among your fellow economists and maybe talk a little bit about who Hans Rosling was and why he was important?
Sure. I think the reaction was shock. He was pretty young, 68, and he'd had a short illness. So I think there was surprise from the people I talked to about it because we hadn't known how ill he was. And I think his importance is it's hard to quantify for me because I really appreciated what he did. The most important thing for me from his work was he was able to change people's opinions about what was happening in the world by using facts and figures and data, statistics that he compiled to make you really rethink your opinions about development and the poor and how the world was. And he was extremely practical. He worked in human health in Africa for years, and just a couple years ago he went to Liberia to work to help fight the Ebola outbreak that happened there. I mean, he really put in practice his knowledge of economics and statistics, and that was of great help in public health as well as in economics.
Where was he living at this period?
So he's been in Sweden teaching at the the institute there, the main university, Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, the capital, for probably been like 8 years he's been there. And before that, he was in public health in sub-Saharan Africa.
And have you ever had a chance to meet him?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to meet him at an education conference, the ECIS conference in Lisbon, Portugal, about 5-6 years ago, I think it was. And he gave a presentation that I've already been teaching now for 20 years. At the time, 15 years, is probably the best presentation I'd ever seen in terms of use of visual information and sharing ideas and getting complex concepts across to every person there. It was fantastic.
And in speaking of teaching, you have, you know, your own high school.
We sat in the front row.
Yeah, oh, really?
We sat in the front row. Myself and another economist sat in the front row, and then we got our picture taken with him.
Oh,
it was kind of a hero, another fanboy moment.
Well, I was going
like talking to you guys.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I mean, I didn't realize that you'd had that kind of contact with him, that he was very important. I mean, to your students, you teach high school students. Do they find him inspiring? Was he someone that was he able to reach them on this topic of economics worldwide?
Well, they always thought that his presentations were better than mine. he's just a great speaker. So when you watched his interviews, you could really tell both his understanding and his joy of the subject. And he was both funny and knowledgeable, and he really was able to share information. And my students have always enjoyed his presentations. And actually, we talked about his death. And we will be watching a video for the introduction to development economics with my seniors in next week. So, yeah, he's still, you know, it's a great loss.
Yeah, I'm here with Mr. F, and we're talking about the passing of Hans Rosling, a very well-known economist worldwide, died at a young age, too. Very sad news. One, I mean, it is an NFL show, and we've probably thrown our listeners for quite a loop at this point. would you compare him? Is there any NFL figure that you could compare Rosling to? Is there anyone out there?
This is tougher because I'm not as knowledgeable, but I went to Wessling, and I asked Chris for a little help, too. So I thought Wade Phillips, you know, an X's and O guys and funny. And Chris thought maybe his dad, Bum Phillips.
Ooh, I like that.
And I also thought that really smart lineman from Baltimore, the mathematician, Urschel or something like that.
Oh, yeah, the guy that's on all the commercials. The overly mathematical guy, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess Hans Rosling was a really good X's and O's guy who was also funny. So whoever you got in your head for that, that's Rosling.
Love the comparison. Final question, is there and maybe you'd end up here someday if there is there an economics hall of fame out there?
I won't end up there, but I think the Nobel Prize in Economics is probably the top hall of fame honor that's been going on for almost 50 years. And there's some incredible figures in that list. And there's some other lists, probably some historical lists, but that'd be one for sure.
Well, you never know. Hopefully, you know, hopefully by appearing on this podcast, it's setting the path ahead for you to get the Nobel and more. Thank you for joining us. It's always great to talk a little economic theory with you, and we'll have you on the show again to talk some football, I hope.
Thanks, Mark. As always, thanks so much for the pod, and congrats to Greg and all of you for a great season. Greg on the Super Bowl win, but also for all of you, just fantastic work as always.
Yeah, it's really all about Greg in the end, so we're very excited about that dynamic. All right, we will talk with you soon. Thank you so much.